This episode brought to you by Origins, technology for today's lenders. On the show today, we have Sensibill's very own Isabella Gabowich talking about earning members' trust in 2022 from the plummet in 2021. What happened in 2021? So Isabella is here to explain it all for us and give us some tips on how we can get it back in 2022. So check it out. On today's program, we have Sensibill's very own Isabella Gabowich. How are you, Isabella?
I am great. Thank you very much, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. Better now that you're here. So now we get to talk about a pretty cool topic. It's all about earning members' trust in 2022 from the plummet that happened in 2021. So first, I'm going to start out with what happened in 2021? So what happened? Why did this members' trust plummet in 2021? Can you tell us that?
Oh, absolutely. And it's so interesting because early in the pandemic, we saw that there were all of these quick moves by banks in order to be able to provide financial relief. You had the PPP loans, you had stimulus checks, and that positively impacted trust and loyalty.
Oh, yeah.
But it turns out that it was somewhat short-lived. So by middle of last year, Gallup polls were already showing that those institutions that early on saw that uplift in trust, the medical system, schools, banks, they had already dropped back down to almost their pre-pandemic levels.
Oh,
and
wow.
And so I know. So it's still a little bit above where it was, but already had dipped right back down. And in the meantime, you have more and more consumers that are putting their trust into fintechs. And so last year, EY reported that 31% of consumers were naming a fintech as their primary financial relationship. That's up from 6% two years prior. And so, banks are still ahead in this trust equation, but the trend is not favorable to them.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah, those fintechs are nipping at the heels of the financial institutions out there for sure. And so how do, let's say, credit unions in this case, because that's who our audience is. So how do they earn the members' trust back? What do they need to do to get back on the positive side of things, I guess?
Well, paramount, of course, is really protecting customers' data, the security, respecting data privacy laws. And this really is a place where financial institutions, credit unions in particular, they do this really well already. They've got very robust risk governance structures, all of those policies in place. But in second place, in order to be able to rebuild that or to really build up that trust, is to make sure that you've got the best products and services and that you're helping your members progress to meet their financial goals. And see, this is where credit unions used to have a really strong advantage because of the fact that they were so close to their community and they had that personal relationship. They knew it, people coming up to their branch on an individual level. Yeah. But particularly now, as we're doing so much more of our banking in a digital way, you've lost that face-to-face interaction, and you need to find other ways in order to be able to recapture that and understand that you want to speak to that small business professional differently than you're going to be speaking to that new parent. There's a completely different set of products that you want to be offering them. And you don't want to offer them something that isn't going to be relevant to them, because that not knowing who I am ends up eroding their sense of confidence that you're there to really help them when you need them.
Yeah,
completely. Or when they need you.
Yeah. That's where the data comes in, all this type of stuff, knowing what your members want at the time that they need it. So nothing could be more true. So what do they need to, because I read in the press release that they need more open, transparent communication, or just kind of really opening up those communication channels, because what you talked about, the digital divide, as a lot of people are calling it, that really kind of separated us a little bit, because we didn't have that face-to-face interaction anymore, although it's coming back a little bit. But so what about, can you share with us about the kind of the transparent communication and those steps in that area?
Oh, absolutely. So, and you mentioned the fact, this digital divide and the fact that we're doing so much more digitally. And what's so interesting as well too, is that, decades ago, we were watching the same TV shows and reading the same newspapers. We're sharing the same events.
Yeah.
And, you know, so advertising as well was this mass advertising. It was a generic vision of this ideal, you know, world that people can live in. But everything is so niche right now, where you've got, you know, my Netflix recommendations end up being completely different from those of my husband. And I've got algorithms on like social media that are curating, you know, videos to my interests only, are reinforcing my worldview. And so you can have two individuals, you can have, let's, you know, call them Alex and TJ, right? Sure. And they could be living in the same area of the city. They might have the same demographics. Mm-hmm. So on paper, they look the same, but have widely different values and behaviors. So you can have Alex, who's been living in this, you know, world and has become very, you know, eco-conscious, is a vegan, is, you know, very interested in our environmental causes. Mm-hmm. Whereas TJ, you know, same demographics, more budget-minded, leans toward convenience. And they might still both be shopping. And in fact, probably are, you know, both shopping at Amazon, at Walmart, Target, Costco, those same general retailers.
Yeah.
But you want to be messaging to Alex differently than you are messaging to TJ. You want different imagery. You want different positioning. And so again, like bringing this back into the financial space, you want to, you know, think about what are the products that are going to be relevant to them. So TJ might have a lower risk tolerance, so or less disposable income. So you could be promoting Roundup savings accounts, or give them receipt tracking tools, targeted card linked offers that offer better day-to-day savings. Whereas Alex maybe is going to be more interested in ethical funds that your institution has available, or maybe more of a local merchants, you know, shop local kind of mindset. And you want to be able to like build up those partnerships with local merchants, because that'll be a lot more relevance to Alex. And so those are the kinds of things that you want to be understanding, you know, that level down beyond just the demographics of what do they truly care about?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's such a great point. Because when you first said, you know, we may be neighbors, but we're worlds apart as far as what our needs are and what we're watching on TV or what we're reading or whatever, or what podcasts we're listening to, you know? So it's so funny how we're kind of splintered now. Whereas I think the only one show that we all watched probably was what happened about a week ago was the Super Bowl. So that might be the only one show that we all watch.
It really is. Yeah.
So
the Super Bowl is one of our only shared events. Even Olympics is getting, you know, record low viewership.
Yeah. That wasn't so interesting this time around, unfortunately. So maybe next time. So yeah. Good point. Great point. So why is this stuff so important today, especially again, since we're so immersed in this digital environment now? So what's the importance of getting this trust back?
Well, ultimately people want to belong. So we're in this kind of really strange state where people are incredibly disloyal in some ways, because the cost of switching is just so easy, lot easier than it ever was before.
Yep.
But at the same time, people want to feel that sense of connection. And so you've got these really strong brand relationships. Like think of your Apples, think of your Teslas that have almost like a cult following where people want to be part of that. So if you manage to find a way to really make people feel seen, make people feel heard, make people feel that human connection and that their empathy is there, people want to give their loyalty to you. They're looking for that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I could, like from a, you know, economics perspective, you want the loyalty. I mean, keeping a customer is far less expensive than acquiring the customer in the first place.
Yeah.
So find ways in order to be able to retain them, to make them feel as if, you know, they're being seen and heard.
That's such a good point you brought up, because I interviewed a gentleman from Visions Federal Credit Union, the CEO there, Tyrone Muse, and he was saying the same thing. And he himself gets out in the community and talks to people, and they do all these crazy little videos and stuff in the community, and everybody knows him, and it's really kind of cool. And it's really paid off for their credit union, because their credit union is very well known in their community and very well respected as well. So because of the things that they do in the community, and he gets out there and he says, yeah, everybody knows me. And it's like, why didn't more people do that? Things like that. A lot of credit unions do already do that type of stuff, but it's really cool to hear it firsthand and how it works.
And what I love about that example that you just gave is that oftentimes whenever you have someone talking about, you know, all of these things that you need to do, and we talk about personalization and hyper-personalization, it's always with this perspective that it has to be this, you know, massively engineered digital transformation, yep, incredibly expensive project. But I mean, yes, with your money center banks, they've got the resources to do that. But particularly with the credit unions, there may not be the same, you know, technology teams available. Mm. You don't have the same staff on hand, yeah, but there are still ways in which you can still accomplish a lot of that personalization just from the data that you already have as a financial institution, and to be able to use it a little bit more effectively. So let's use an example. So let's say I've recently gone back to school for a new degree. Mm-hmm. And so as a credit union, you might be able to detect this from looking at signals in my data. So you might see that my address on record recently changed as I moved to, you know, closer to a state college. I have more or a new set of money transfers and they're going to the school. Mm-hmm. My spending patterns look different. I'm spending more on books, printing services. I have less discretionary less discretionary spending. And so as you know this, you can start to empathize with my needs. And with that empathy, you realize maybe money is tighter for me. So I might be eligible for a special, you know, rate on car insurance because I'm a student. Mm-hmm. Or I might have a need to be able to share my household expenses. So do you have, you know, checking accounts for students that have, you know, complimentary, you know, peer-to-peer transfers or something like that, you know, mm-hmm, free Zelle transfers.
Yep.
And once you know that and you've, you know, targeted me and identified that I might be a student, I might benefit from these, let me know through like the ATM on-screen messaging or, you know, next time I open up my digital app with like a message letting me know that these things are there.
Yeah.
Or if you're a small CU, you don't even really have to automate that. Then generate a report for your ops team and have your branch staff call customers a few times a year with a personalized conversation,
yep,
because you know some things that we could be having this conversation about. And so if you're calling me, then you're telling me about the fact that, you know, we're talking about my needs as a student, but you know, maybe my neighbor down the road, you're, you know, telling them about support for them because it looks like they're starting up a new business or they have a side hustle. And it's a different kind of conversation you could be having.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Such good points. Good points indeed. So anything else here to add to this? Because I mean, we could probably go on for another half hour easily. You have a job to do, so I don't want to keep you too long, Isabella, but to anything else here to add, because this is such great important, the significance of this today, especially the personalization aspect that you just described is so vital right now.
Well, I guess the only thing that I would probably just really want to reemphasize is the fact that there's been so much superficial efforts, you know, under the guise of financial wellness, but it's often done in such a generic way. And there's a real need in order to provide hyper-personalized, you know, products and services that are going to be more relevant by understanding what I need. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, I mean, financial wellness is not one of those one size fits all. You can't just give me a budgeting tool. You can't just tell me that Starbucks lattes add up, because that's not particularly meaningful. But you know, I need to instead be getting tailored financial advice that's going to be relevant based on, you know, the stage of life that I'm in,
yeah,
based on the needs that I have. Give me tools that are going to help me track my spending, my expenses, make sure that I've got money set aside for taxes. If I've got a side hustle, I want to make sure that I'm not going to be left in a situation where I can't pay my tax bill, yeah, when the time comes.
Yeah.
And by being there for me in those key moments with the, you know, those times of stress, that's when you're building those relationships. That's when you're building that loyalty that's going to, you know, keep the person with that brand, mm-hmm, from it for the long term.
Yeah, that pays off for sure. And before I let you go, can you give us a quick plug on Sensibill, what you guys do and how you help credit unions out?
Oh, absolutely. So Sensibill, so we are the only customer data platform that's designed specifically for the financial services industry. So basically what the platform does is it's taking data from financial documents like receipts, invoices, bills, and it's applying AI models to extract insights from these data.
Ah.
And so basically the platform, and this is why I'm so passionate about it, it's recognizing, you know, members' spending habits, their behaviors, their lifestyles, brand preferences, and so on. and feeding that back to the credit union so that they can connect with their members and support their wants and needs.
Oh, that's cool. I like that a lot. Good stuff. All right, Isabella, I'm going to let you get back to work. Appreciate this very important, very timely information, and look forward to the next chat. Well done.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Mike. It was a pleasure.
Oh, you're welcome. This episode brought to you by Origins, technology for today's lenders.